Hello and welcome to Questcast, your weekly adventure through games. This week, Caitlin's feeling a bit sick, so got my friend Michael Doan to come in. So, Michael, where can we find you on the internet for people who want to know?
Yeah, very occasionally I'm on Twitch, so I go by RaptorShadow89. I'm on Facebook with the same and YouTube as RaptorShadow.
Nobody looks up people on Facebook.
No, they don't, but it's probably the only place.
Unless they are trying to sell you something.
It's so I can spam my Twitch links at people without bugging all of my friends.
Yeah. Or they're a single in your area.
Yes, this is true.
All right. So just before we started this, we were just talking about MMOs.
Yes.
Because there's a bit of a lull in the games industry at the moment because of that E3 just was. We're talking about what MMOs bore us basically. What I really liked was Guild Wars 1 because it really did something different with how it does abilities. So you had to go capture them from enemies, and it was a cool, unique mechanic and gave you like really cool, not really cool, but like engaging things for you to do around the world. It wasn't just collect 5 of these things. Like at the end of the game, you're like, I really want this ability that I don't have, and it's like an elite ability or something. You're like, who do I have to kill to like capture it? And you can only have 8 abilities equipped at once, and if you wanted to capture one, you had to sacrifice one of those abilities for a signet capture ability.
Nice. Yeah, so, Guild Wars 1, I remember... I never got like main Guild Wars 1. I never played a lot of it. I remember very vaguely playing the beta test of it because it was delivered over BitTorrent, which was... very unique at the time.
It was back when games were trying to get on the BitTorrent bandwagon.
Yeah,
and they didn't want to host it themselves because, like, I'm pretty sure BattleNet does. Some sort of torrent thing for their downloads.
I remember that because there was a drama about this when ISPs were all talking about shaping torrent data. And there was this whole thing. But the Blizzard patcher uses it for WoW. It's totally legitimate, guys. Yeah, because it decentralized it. It was like, you know, people would download the patches, and then suddenly everyone, because it was torrent-based, was suddenly Cedars, and it distributed the load. It was again, pretty revolutionary at the time.
Yeah, banning something like a good technology like that is never the answer.
It's not solving the problem at all. It's ignoring the real problem.
You're like, we can't torrent, so we'll just go back to downloading, and everyone's still getting their illegal content. Anyway, let's talk about games. What's happened in the last week? I'm going to pick a random. We have a doc that we're going off. I'm going to pick a random topic. So first one, because we were just talking about Blizzard. Blizzard applies for a patent on Overwatch's play of the game highlights.
Yes,
system.
I did see this before the doc. It strikes me as very similar to. Do you remember that Namco had a patent on loading screen minigames?
Yes, it strikes me more similar that they've, because Blizzard are partnered with or owned by Activision, I can never remember which.
They're merged, they're essentially the same company.
Yeah, one always owns the other. We just don't know who. But their patent on loot boxes and
their system for promoting microtransactions based on player actions or something like that.
Correct. They're just probably... Because they, I was talking to someone last week, or sorry, the other day, about it, and they're like, "Oh, but what about games like COD?" And I'm just like, "COD's Activision; it's safe. Like they'll
it won't affect COD.
Patent it and then use it in all their games.
Yeah, it won't affect COD in a negative sense at all because they own the patent.
Yeah, because that has like." Kill cams and the kill.
It has kill cams, but that's not the same. That's not quite the same as the.
I think in the new
one,
my friend was telling me because I don't play them, but my friend was telling me that there's a kill cam of the game, or something like that. So that's basically the same thing, but renamed.
It's interesting because generally game mechanics can't be patented. Specific implementations of a mechanic can be.
Well, this is what they're doing. They're doing a specific implementation. So they are patenting the way that Overwatch selects moment to highlight because it essentially records data throughout the game. It uses a bunch of criteria to go over that, saying, you know, was there a kill streak for example, yeah. I'm not sure the exact criteria, but let's say there was like three different kill streaks. It'll go over that, matching it with more data, like was this kill streak in an unusual place, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Until it finds the
I'm sure they do like massive data aggregation across like every time a map is played and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. They have lots of that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I don't like that they're doing that.
I think I mean, it's the patterning stuff that's, I mean, if you do it better than anyone else, do you really need to patent it?
I mean they super don't need to patent anything. I'm really happy with trademarks. Like if you've got a unique IP,
trademarks is fine. That's intellectual property.
That's also open to abuse, King.
True. but I got no problem with a lot of IP stuff. You know, it's usually to do with the truly creative part, the artwork, the style,
That also being said, if you create something really revolutionary, you know, why...
True.
And you want to, you want to protect yourself, go for it. I just don't think this is one of those cases.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But also to me, the video game, it strikes me as very similar to board and tabletop games in that it's long established. You can't copyright a game mechanic.
Yeah, exactly. Now, that really sucks with board games, though, because... Like with a computer game, you have to work backwards, backwards compatible it to, I don't know, what's that? It wasn't backwards compatible, but you essentially have to reverse engineer. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
To find out how it works. But with a board game, you can buy that and know how it works in 20 minutes, but let's say 20 minutes, go make your own and just call it like, zombies with no heads.
But true. I guess the thing is, if you could copyright a game mechanic, tabletop RPGs would be limited to Dungeons and Dragons and nothing else.
There's also that.
That's Monopoly would suddenly be the only board game where you could roll a dice and move a character on the board.
I hate Monopoly. I've said this on the Questcast before. And very much.
Monopoly is the bane of human existence.
Well, I was talking to Caitlin.
Yeah.
And I was saying, board games these days, it's very rare that someone gets kicked out early. So... You don't lose at the start. Yeah, you might get to a position where you're like, I can't win, but I can still make sure someone else doesn't.
You should have interesting decisions to make for as long as possible.
Or like, let's say you've got 1 point, everyone else is on 40, but you can do something. You're like, I can take points away from the person who's in the lead, try and get second to come first or something like that. Whereas Monopoly, it's just you're out and then three of your friends play for the next 3 hours while,
do something else.
You stare at the fridge wondering what to make for breakfast tomorrow.
Exactly.
Or you're at a friend's house and then you sit there awkwardly while everyone else has fun.
Yeah, you spend the first 40 minutes of the game getting stuff so you can do the slightly interesting part.
Yeah,
and then you spend another 40 minutes where the one player who got into buying all the hotels before everyone else because they were ruthless and playing it properly, sit and smile while everyone else has an anxiety attack about which space they're going to land on.
They called it Monopoly, but the first working title was Learn How to Be Donald Trump.
I can't remember what it was actually called now, but there was a different name. And the whole point of the game was to prove how this kind of capitalism sucks for everybody.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It was actually had quite a political bent, and then it got bought up by Parker Brothers. And is it Hasbro now, or...?
Yeah, Hasbro owns Parker, but I don't know. Hasbro owns like 40 companies that each individually they own another 40 companies, and there's just
they
a
own
web
everything
of companies.
That pretty much everything that Asmodee Group don't own these days.
Yeah, I do not like how many companies own stuff, like Disney owning basically every franchise and ruining it.
Our entire Western popular culture belongs to Disney now.
Exactly, like. Marvel, the only thing that I've liked from, like, really liked and thought was, like, a breakout was Deadpool 2. Like,
I haven't watched Deadpool 2 yet, but I am looking forward to it.
Oh, you should get on it. All the rest of the Marvel movies, they're good, they're well-produced, but, like, I can't say that they're amazing. Like, if I'm 40 years from now, I'll be like, what were those Marvel movies? I don't know, whatever. But, like... The first three Star Wars, 4, 5, 6, not 1, 2, 3.
The trilogy.
Whatever that always makes it hard. I'm like, because when you say first, the people are like, do you mean 1, 2, 3? I'm like, no, like
actually
chronologically first, like Well, I guess they're both, I don't know. I don't know how you say it. The original
trilogy. They're temporally first?
Temporally first. There we go. That's the one.
Oh, God.
But even if you say original trilogy, one, two, three is still... Ah, it's...
It should, I mean, traditionally...
George Lucas has just made lots of arguments for the sake of it.
He has a lot to answer for.
Also, two things about him. His wife at the time, I'm not sure if they're together, but she won Oscars or something for like her productions for it.
I have long said that the best thing about Star Wars was everyone else involved with it other than George Lucas.
That's really funny because that's how I feel about the like the first trilogy, the chronological first trilogy.
Yes, yeah, that's everyone. What I mean. That's what but I mean. Because
it had Ewan McGregor.
Oh, chronological, sorry. Ah, oh, sorry.
Yeah, like I'm saying, like the movie itself, not good, but all the people in it, like I loved Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi in it. Like they were played by great actors, and then there's Anakin and Jar Jar Binks, and like Hayden Christensen, Anakin other movies.
He's okay.
I don't hate him, but I cannot stand his character.
Look, they managed to make Natalie Portman come off awful.
Yeah, we were talking about this when we were playing Vermintide. That's right.
We were. I think she's quite good. And how do you make her come off completely useless and incompetent?
Exactly.
But apparently, you get George Lucas to direct. I think what strikes me is that, again, the prequel trilogy is it's George Unchained. He was able to do what he wanted. Nobody was willing or able to tell him no. Whereas, have you ever looked at the first draft of Star Wars?
I haven't, but
it's
on
garbage.
Paper. Well, on paper, like if you told some executives the idea for Star Wars after knowing about the first three that they've done, it probably didn't sound bad. They're probably like, this is going to make lots of money, and it has.
No, okay, I mean like Star Wars 1977, the original Star Wars.
See, this is we're already getting
I know this is getting confusing. So no, that original draft is it's a mess. It's a complete fever dream of like 70s sci-fi nonsense. It's a little bit Foundation, a little bit Dune, a little bit everything all cobbled together. And it was edited out of it. That was I'm going to say Maria Lucas.
I think that's her name.
She got the Oscar for editing.
Yeah, because she should have. Bringing this back to what we were talking about, though. Disney owns Star Wars now, and I don't think there's been a good Star Wars game or even a good Star Wars idea since they have. Marvel games are terrible as well. The only thing I'm looking forward to is the Spider-Man game on PS4. And even that looks... See, the story looks good, but the web-slinging in it, I have to say, does not look as good. And I think I saw this on Reddit or something. But someone pointed out that it's not like the physics-based web-slinging that we're used to in the other really good Spider-Man games. If you fell really fast and used your web, you would swing at that momentum. Whereas now it looks like if you use your web, it slows you down to make it like controllable and stuff. So
I'll have to see it a bit more in action.
Yeah, people are speculating it's to like make it so it's really easy to play and like anyone can kind of pick it up. I'm like, that's not what I want from a Spider-Man game.
I don't know. Having tried very hard to enjoy Dark Souls, I'm not really on the get good side of the argument anymore.
Exactly.
I can pick up a game and enjoy it, like there's nothing wrong with making it enjoyable for people. If you make it hard for the sake of making it hard, you're pandering to a niche that is mostly a bunch of.
But if it was already jerks. If it was already like a good mechanic that everyone who's played the previous ones likes, are you just pandering to everyone that you like? You just want the game to be for everyone. Because I really dislike that about Skyrim, how like I really liked the TTRPG of Morrowind, and now it's just not probably a game for me.
Yeah, it's tough because at least, especially with the Spidey ones, they're not going to be the same developers. The last good Spidey game I can think of, we're talking during the Sam Raimi movie era.
I think it was called Spider-Man 2. I played it so much.
Yeah, oh, so that would have been 2006, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. I played it on PlayStation 1 or 2. I don't know around that time. Anyway, do you want to pick a topic to talk about? Pick anything.
Let's have a look. Where's...
in the meantime.
Oh, speaking of tabletop stuff, Binding of Isaac getting a card game.
Yes, their Kickstarter is like, I think, 10 times the amount they needed, or like more, like 15.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. So in Australian dollars, the goal was $67,791.
Probably 50 grand UK is probably what they're aiming for.
Yeah, probably something like that.
USD, not UK. What am I on about?
USD, yeah.
Yeah, 50 million USD.
Currently sitting at 1,092,000.
That's in didgeridoo dollars.
That is in didgeridoo dollars. Dollaridoos.
Dollaridoos, that's what we call it. I've always said someone should make a currency called dollaridoos, like a Bitcoin currency.
There was a petition at one point, obviously one that was never going to go anywhere, but to change it to the dollar.
What if every citizen in Australia voted on it?
Oh, you know what? Hey, you could argue that there's a mandate for it, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Politics annoys me. Let's not get into that. Yeah, but yeah, Binding of Isaac card game.
All, I think there is a serious possibility there, though, of a successful political party built on Simpson shitposting.
That, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
It would engage with the public in a way not seen in generations.
Yeah, once, like, everyone who, like, likes memes is, like, kind of the older generation, and, like, there's just a political party just posting memes, and there's just people voting on who's funnier, like, where are we? How downhill is that? How downhill is that? Binding of Isaac card game, though. So
yes.
I don't think they needed to do a Kickstarter. Kickstarter, like if you're an upcoming nobody, I think that's who Kickstarter is for.
I think, especially in the realm of in tabletop games, it seems to be still a very big thing to keep doing Kickstarters. It does keep them with complete creative control.
It does. Like, I think that is good. At the same time, Ed McMillan or something?
Yeah, Ed McMillan.
Ed McMillan. That's wrong. How, like, 50k USD, his company probably has that. This is just, like, the way I look at it is this kind of thing is just, oh, we want a pre-order, but we don't want to call it a pre-order, so we're going to go on Kickstarter.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, it seems to be very much the done thing, and I don't know what the margins are like in tabletop games. I mean, there is a lot of physical expense that goes into them. And if you're not going through, you know, Fantasy Flight or Asmodee or something, there's probably a lot of risk on getting it into stores and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good
distribution
point. If they named it a pre-order, no one would have gotten it, or like only massive fans. Doing a Kickstarter, people are like, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. They get the hype going.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm looking at it going, man, yeah, there's still a couple of weeks left on this because it funded so quickly. I get paid, I might as well get it.
It's obviously something people want. It just sometimes gets on my nerves that games that don't need to do it, or like IPs that don't need to do it, are doing it.
I would agree with that. There's definitely been a lot of very big companies who are doing it. But at the same time, I think sometimes it's easy to overestimate how much money, especially the developers, often it's the developers who are going to Kickstarter, how much money they've actually got and how much risk they're actually taking on. I think a good example to me is, what's their name? They've just got bought up by Paradox. Harebrained Schemes.
Yes.
So these guys did Shadowrun and Battletech.
Oh, yep.
Because pretty much
I like Paradox as a publisher, by the way. So that
I'm a big fan of Paradox. This is essentially the reincarnation of Facet, who did Battletech and Shadowrun on tabletop, in a way. So everything they've done has been crowdfunded. And it's easy to go, but Shadowrun was a big success. But how much money did they actually make back? You know, they're very expensive projects to do without a publisher's backing.
Yeah, I know. Just annoying.
So I'm glad that they've been able to go to Kickstarter now, three, four times and get successful, well-reviewed games out of them.
Yeah.
Paradox, they won't need to do it.
Yeah, that's true. There's a few games that have gone, oh yeah, we want $1 million for this game because we don't want to get a publisher involved. We want to make it the way we want to make it. They get that. A year later, they're like, we ran out of money. A publisher's going to fund the rest of the game, and then it changes.
Yeah, that's the other side of the problem. And this is the problem I see with a lot of Kickstarters, of just not sticking to your game plan.
Exactly.
And going, hey, we made like 10 times as much money as we expected to make. We now need to provide 10 times as much game. No, you don't.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Make the best version of the game that you intended to make. Stick with that. Make it as polished as possible. You now have all this money to make sure that you can develop this as best you can, and you can keep your guys working on it. You can put some money aside for publishing if you want to stay 100% independent. You know, you can start to think about doing all of that stuff.
You don't need to tack on
an entire new section of the game. And there's nothing wrong with stretch goals. But again,
yeah, stretch goals are really
part
good.
Of your game plan. You've got to understand X amount of money means we will get X feature. And once you put that out there, it stays as it is.
Yeah, and if you want, you could maybe put that towards an expansion after you make that.
Yeah, yeah. There's just a lot of feature creep is the death of so many projects.
It is. To play devil's advocate as well, though, I imagine there's a lot of these projects where they've designed the whole thing, got to developing it halfway through, they're like, this isn't fun.
True, because...
that must suck. You
know, yeah, and definitely there have been cases, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but
I can't think of any off the top of my head, but like, I've worked
like
out...
halfway development and they're sorry. Actually, Doom. The Doom 2016, that is fantastic, and anyone who says otherwise is a bad human being.
Okay.
I love that version of Doom so much. But they were producing the one that was essentially, it got derogatively referred to as Call of Doom.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was essentially turning into a modern military shooters type thing with demons. And they got a long way into development. Check out Noclip. Dude does some awesome documentaries on YouTube. And he did a deep dive interviews with the developers, like the whole, like what happened with that version of Doom. And they got like, I would want to say at least halfway into production before they took a step back and realized this isn't right. This isn't fun. This isn't the game we should be making. And they started from scratch.
Yeah. And that's always good.
And that's a risky move. Cause I mean, the amount of money in pre-production and assets and all that payroll, you know, to do all that work to go, actually, we need to start over. That's a huge risk. And so many times I think a project that gets to that stage then has to continue and finish because they need a project. They need a product for the publisher to justify the money.
Yeah, exactly.
And it turns out to be garbage. And not everyone's got the luxury. And even with a Kickstarter, you don't have the luxury sometimes of doing that. But certainly from the perspective of creating a better product, a better game, a more enjoyable end result, sometimes it's what needs to happen.
Yep, I super agree. I think for people though, it really sucks when you pre-order, well not pre-order, let's say you kickstart this thing, it's not what you expected, but there's nothing that could be done about it. And do they have the right to a refund?
I think this comes from you need to make sure you have a nuanced understanding of what Kickstarter is.
Yes,
you
I think
not
people
pre-ordering a product.
Yeah, people, because I've kickstarted things that haven't gone through, and I'm okay with that. Like, especially some games where I paid like $10, where I'm like, oh, if this gets made, that'd be really cool. But that's it's investing essentially. It's not purchasing something; you are investing in this product.
And yet, at the same time, you're not a venture capitalist, and you don't have a stake in the control of the project.
Yeah, what's that? There's a Kickstarter that does do that.
Is that Indiegogo?
No, Kickstarter for VC.
But yeah, it's very important for people who are kickstarting projects to be very clear in their understanding that you are pledging money to support a project. You are not purchasing it. You are not, you know, investing in the traditional sense. You're not going to get a return other than, you know,
the game,
any
maybe.
Goodies you've been promised. Yeah, because, I mean, this is, in fact, I'm just on the Binding of Isaac Kickstarter page. Frequently asked questions. First one, I am confused. There is no buy button. How do I buy the game? Since Kickstarter is a funding platform, you have to click the back this project button to buy the game. You know, like
exactly.
It's exactly that. You are not purchasing it. It's a funding platform. It's a way for them to get the money to make it happen.
The one that I saw, it only does very few games because they kind of partner with the people making the game to get this working.
Yeah.
And you essentially buy X stocks in the game. And
yeah,
the,
so that's different entirely, yeah.
But it works essentially the same as Kickstarter, And they have these, they have goals. They're like, if you spend $100, you get this many shares. If you spend 50, you get this. If we reach 100,000, you get this much back on your shares. If we reach 200,000, you get this much back. I think that's the proper way to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a much more traditional, it's funny because it's crowdfunded, but with the result being a much more traditional investing arrangement.
But at the same time, it gives like a lot more awareness, saying that this is not you purchasing the game, which is what people basically think with Kickstarter. Because I've seen like companies being sued because they didn't make the Kickstarter product, and like that's
they should not be. Yes, being sued. I agree, they shouldn't be taking the money and running, but
in that case, that's fine because that's fraud. But if they literally like tried, it didn't work.
Exactly, and that's, I think, what was it? There was a Cthulhu card game. I can't remember what it was called now. And yeah, they went bankrupt in production, essentially. They couldn't get it finished. It all fell apart, and people were trying to sue. And it's like, well, no, they were producing the product. They
proved
that they were producing the product, but it fell through because business is business, and you don't always get how you want. And that's when you've got to understand, you're more of an investor. And so if you don't make you'll get the product you were promised, such is life. You know, that's... Yep.
Speaking of Call of Doom, you said before, there's this game Warface. It looks like a bad Call of Duty with like mutants.
Yeah, I was watching that trailer going, man, what's the interesting thing here?
I think it looks to be that there's mutants and like maybe they could like climb on walls, but it just looked like 2004 Call of Duty.
Yeah, it struck me as the most generically, like, it looks like Call of Duty, you know, Infinite Warfare. And like Black Ops 3, in that it's a military shooter. It looks, I mean, it looks perfectly competent, but art style wise, it's just, it's modern military stylings and sci fi tech.
It's coming out for PS4 and Xbox One, by the way, later this year. Early access on, I think it's August for PS4, September for Xbox One. Check it out. Let us know on Twitter what you think of it. I just think, because I saw it being revealed today, and maybe they're a great developer or not. I just, from the trailer, I did not see anything unique or interesting about it.
No, that's pretty much what I saw. I'm like, I couldn't tell, is this a single-player game? Is this just a PvP shooter? Is this one of these PvP shooters that's got like a bunch of backstory written that you'll never engage with?
Yeah, probably.
Like the first Titanfall.
Sticking with good old... crowdfunding, Star Citizen 3.2 is out, or rolls out. So it's got like mining kiosks. I think the kiosks are like a world a universe trade thing, so you can buy things from all over the universe. You don't have to go to the exact thing and it gets shipped to you. Group quantum jumps, so
it's slowly crawling towards playable content.
I don't know, like I don't like that they've, because they're in 3.2, but 3.2 suggests that you've done two DLCs. Really, this feels like 0.7 to me.
To be fair, it's Alpha 3.2.
Yeah, okay, that is true. I'm still not a fan of how they're advertising.
Believe me, I'm not. I'm a backer. I defended Star Citizen for a long time, although I wasn't one of these rabid forum nutcases.
I spent $26 on it.
Yeah, I spent about the same. I got
the basic ship. I flew around in it. I'm like, I hope it gets good. Like, I did it as an investment. The idea of what they wanted to become was really good. And I would play that, but it's not there yet. The other problem I have with this style, because they,
years ago,
I think they had a much more ambitious rollout schedule when it first came out. But the people that play from like...
has to do with... No, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, so... From like 2.0, if you're playing from there, you get a lot more in-game currency. So when the game is fully released, because like they'll keep progression from this point on, I imagine. Likely. Maybe they'll just burn all the progression, but they can't for people that have spent lots of real dollars.
I think I've got a bunch of stuff because I bought in early enough that they were still like, oh, we hit another stretch goal, so here's some more stuff you'll get when the game comes out.
Yeah, and exactly.
I don't know if any of that stuff is still relevant even. They'll have to wipe the quote-unquote persistent universe because it's not fully built yet. Not to what they're telling us it's supposed to be. It's still not an MMO, you know. I think what will happen is you will get an account wipe insofar as any individual stuff, any progression, all that will go. But the fact is, when you pledge and you buy a ship, that goes in a hangar. You own these assets in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
So that will be sitting there waiting for you when you first start.
That's good. That's good. I think that's the correct way to do it. Don't know if they're going to do it that way.
I don't know if it's ever going to happen.
I think they'll eventually get it released. Like, they have so much money. I think they're taking their time and getting it right with the technology.
I've read some pretty shocking horror stories about just poor management. They redid the entire FPS. Like, there's an entire FPS module in this game.
Yeah, no, I've seen
actually,
it.
And they actually had to rebuild it from scratch.
And I'm okay and with that they think that it was really bad. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Part of the problem they had is they had contractors who were building the assets in the wrong scale to the rest of the game. And
that is...
Like, where's the oversight? But where's the oversight in that? Like, they had to start over on that whole thing.
See, can you blame...
Who's paying attention?
It's really hard in this type of stuff, especially... I've worked at game studios before, and sometimes, like, surprise, surprise, I worked at a company who contracted for Disney. So I know what working for them is like. They will farm out, like, these big companies. I'm not saying the people that make Star Citizen are, but it is very easy for you to say, all right, we need these things done on a in a certain time.
Yeah.
We're going to hire an outsource company. And what they usually do is they give them a list of stuff to do and a time to do it. It's progress reports, but I could very much easily see, like, they were doing all this artwork and they got screenshots of it and it looked fine. And then when it got delivered, none of it worked.
Yeah.
So I could easily see that happening.
Yeah. I think the other problem is, I don't know how much you know about Chris Roberts, the designer.
I've looked into him a few times. Seems like he has lots of ambition.
Yes, he's a very ambitious person.
He's like the Elon Musk of video games to me.
Yeah, but Elon Musk has actually made money.
Oh, Chris Roberts has now made money. I mean, he's made money.
Now, and it's mostly going into this big burning furnace of the Star Citizen. But this is the guy who created Wing Commander.
Yes, yes.
So he is in many ways the god of 90s space sims. And he did Freelancer, which I'm sure a lot of people are fondly on Freelancer. However, Freelancer was a project that was so ambitious and so over budget and so over time that Microsoft bought the company that was developing it, which was Digital Anvil, I think, fired him from the company so that they could finish the project.
That's fair. I still really loved Freelancer.
I love Freelancer too, but he's got a history for promising the universe, as it were, and never really delivering it, and just iterating and iterating and iterating, and he wants to be so hands-on with things when he's a project manager. He needs to sit back and let his guys do their job.
That's true.
So I'm getting very skeptical about the scale, and I mean, I was very excited for the announcement. I, like, flew out of my chair, like, oh my god, this is the game I've wanted for, like, 10 years.
Exactly.
And I was following it very closely, and the feature creep that I was talking about before with Kickstarter campaigns, this is a perfect example of just, this went from, we want to make a space flight sim like the old Wing Commander games, but with modern technology, it's going to be awesome, to we are going to build the biggest game ever made in history. And that happened very quickly.
Yeah.
And I don't think they've ever really gotten the project back under control. And they've also been, hey, we're going to be completely transparent with the community, which sounds amazing on paper, until you start realizing the kind of people who are in the video games community.
Yeah.
And they will read into everything you say.
Yeah, there's that. I think being fully transparent is fine, but don't spend time making content just to be transparent.
Yes.
That also being said,
there are like three different ways of communicating with these guys.
If you don't have guys like these, like Chris Roberts, do things get pushed further? Yes, this project might blow out of budget.
This is true.
Blow out completely and not be a game. But I think it's games like this where other companies can come in and like, all right, let's learn from their mistakes, make a really big game. And
yeah, no, I'll give you that, because I don't think Elite Dangerous, for all its flaws and for all of the amount I actually don't enjoy that game, but I can credit its ambition and credit the fact that it got a release.
Exactly.
I don't think that would have happened if the Kickstarter for Star Citizen hadn't taken off. That's a very good point.
So there's a lot of things. There's how many of the first electric cars were complete messes, non-profitable projects that a lot of people probably said, you know, these aren't going to work, we'll stick with petrol. But there was people that are like, no, this is the future, we got to do it. Yeah, we're going to lose some money for the next 20 years, but it's going to save us so much for later. There's people like this in every industry. I don't know if Chris Roberts is one or not, but you can't tell while it's happening.
You can't tell until it's done. Really, at the end of the day, for Star Citizen, I'm less concerned with the MMO. I really don't care if that crashes or burns. I want Squadron 42 because he promised a game that was essentially Modern Wing Commander, and that's what I want.
Yeah, Squadron 42 does look good.
I want a mission-based space flight sim, and it's about time we got one.
Exactly.
Free Space 2 was a very long time ago.
Let's move on, because we've talked about Star Citizen for a while.
Yes.
I recently just played The Amazing Adventures of Captain Spirit. You can check it out on the Kestcast YouTube channel. It's a Let's Play.
I'm about to play that probably tonight.
I won't spoil anything, but it's got adult themes. It's very good. For the short, like, it look at it as a short film. And I don't mean that it's not interactive, but like, instead of a full game, it is a short game, like a short film is to a film.
I'm a fan of that kind of short form content. I think there's definitely a push in games to, how many hours do you get out of something? And that's not necessarily...
Well, this is free, so no matter... If you got 1 minute, it's still the same as 4 hours.
I want to play Life is Strange, and I haven't got around to it. And this looks really interesting, so I'm actually very keen to give it a shot.
Exactly. So it came out June 26th. It was on PC, Xbox One, PS4. It's free. It's based in the Life is Strange universe. As far as I can tell, have you played the other Life is Strange games?
No, I haven't.
All I'll say is there's a butterfly in the first ones, and that makes a appearance here. If I was you before playing this, I would play Life is Strange and then Life is Strange Before the Storm.
Okay, I might have to track them down then.
Because this is set in that universe, and Life is Strange 2 will feature characters from this and characters from the originals and stuff like that. So,
alright, we'll have to go check it out then.
I will say that you probably don't have to play them in order, but I wouldn't. I would recommend doing it.
Wouldn't use this as your first, yeah. I do like to start at the top Steam review. You get to be emotionally destroyed for free. This is recommended.
Yeah, so Don't Nod Entertainment. I've been playing Vampyr as well. They make that game.
Oh, yeah, that looked interesting.
They make great story games. Vampyr's not as much, because I think they tried to do something a bit more action-y and different.
Yeah.
But their Life is Strange universe is just heart-wrenching. I cannot believe how heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I got the impression from Vampyr or Vampire, whatever it is, that it a little bit wants to be like the modern version of Vampire Bloodlines.
It's probably where it got a lot of its inspiration. I don't think it's trying to replace it. I think a lot of people think that it is, but yeah. There's nothing wrong with getting inspiration.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, it's kind of sad that Bloodlines had the tragic beginning that it did. That game was... It had so much going for it, and there is so much jank and so much that's broken, and oh my god, the worst possible release date in all of gaming history. But
when did it release?
The day before Half-Life 2.
Oh, yeah.
Or the week. This was part of the... Or was it the day after? There was a thing, because it was actually the first third-party game built on Source.
Ah.
I think it couldn't release until Half-Life 2 came out, and that was in the contract. It was on a pre-release version of Source, because obviously they had to feature Locket at some point. So it was very buggy, and it was very unoptimized, and I remember it not running very well on my computer at all until one of the fan patches, because Troika, who was the developer, went bankrupt like immediately after.
That sucks.
Like, they had enough money to patch it twice, and they just had to close down. They were also the guys who developed Arcanum, the steampunk fantasy RPG.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah. They're like, they put out these two amazing RPGs and went bust.
That's unfortunate. I did not know that about that. Because I know the game's become like a kind of cult hero games.
It's a cult classic. Because the writing, I mean, the combat's forgettable, to be completely honest, but the writing's fantastic.
Yeah, and that's what you want from an RPG, though.
Yeah, exactly. And it perfectly leverages World of Darkness IP. Like, it's just... Oh, it's just so well done.
Exactly. So, continuing on to RPGs... Vampire is really good. I really enjoy it. It's not for everyone, and I don't know why people think it should be. But Kingdom Come. Like Pardon?
People are a bit like that. Like, oh, everything should be for everyone. And I know I was saying before how I think, you know, Dark Souls should have an easy mode because I want to enjoy that game. And, you know, it's a bit gatekeepery to be like, this is the only way this game is good is for it to be ridiculously difficult. But at the same time, about
the only way this is going to be good. Yeah, they have a vision. If
there's a vision for the product, then the developers should cater to that vision. You should have creative freedom. You shouldn't try and water down your game to be for everybody. And I totally agree with that as well. There's two ideas, there's two things that are in my head I'm still trying to reconcile.
If every game was for everyone, it would be shit.
Yeah, the world would be boring. It would be Disney.
Yeah, exactly. So Kingdom Come, getting their first DLC, July 5th, From the Ashes. That's
yet another game I haven't played but want to.
It's a bit buggy. The combat is unforgiving. It kind of feels Morrowindy. So you get skills in the things you do for doing them. So you get skills by doing archery. Mm-hmm. And you're shit at it until you just keep doing it.
Yeah, that's what like Elder Scrolls aspires to be in general, but obviously they have watered that down over time.
Yeah, I like it because it from a character perspective going through the game, you do really feel like you come into your own in the things that you keep doing. Like you suck at some of the sword fighting at the start. Like people just own you and you just kind of flail about because you're this peasant who just picked up a sword. That's what you're meant to do. But this game really, really sells that. It's not like you can't restart the game knowing how to sword fight. Like you'd be better, but you can't restart it knowing how all the stuff works and still be able to own everything at the start. Like the game just won't let
you. Kind of like playing Deus Ex, like the original Deus Ex. So and no matter how hard you try, you're going to suck at shooting for the first couple of levels.
Yeah, I think that's a really good RPG mechanic because you're playing the role of this person. You're not playing.
I think as long as it suits the role you're playing, actually just thinking of Deus Ex, it's a little bit weird in Deus Ex that you are this, you know, as it turns out to be genetically grown, cybernetically enhanced, you know, super agent, and yet you can't hit for shit.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make sense. But the start of Morrowind, the start of Kingdom Come.
Absolutely, yeah. It works where the game mechanic is in service of the storytelling. Absolutely.
Exactly. I'm excited to play more of the story. Again, I won't give away any of the story. I think it's really good. Again, you can check out the Let's Play on Castcast. So we'll go forward. As always with DLCs, Overwatch is getting a new hero or has released a new hero. He's a hamster mechanical wrecking ball. The only thing I want from this is every time he gets a play of the game, it should say, "I came in like a wrecking ball." And if it doesn't do that, is it
the money to license that they should?
Yeah. But isn't like, do Activision and Disney become friends because doesn't Disney own Miley Cyrus?
Oh, maybe.
Oh, sorry. Her real name's Miley Cyrus. Well, it's Destiny Hope Cyrus, but whatevs.
I'm going to look up who she's with now. She labels Walt Disney, Hollywood, RCA, Smiley, Miley, Inc.
Yeah, so her name was Destiny Hope Cyrus, and then everyone called her Smiley Miley. I don't know. Because she smiled a lot, and then she changed her name legally, I guess, to Miley. Weird.
I would do that too, though.
Destiny's a bit of a meh name. Enough about that.
Well, I mean, Destiny to me means, the most disappointing video game series in history. So.
Destiny's not great. Anyway, Fallout 76.
I tried a little bit.
Fallout 76. No crossplay because Sony is not as helpful as everyone would like them to be. So no surprises there. I think more and more games are going to come out.
I think this is a little bit of scapegoating. I agree. It's probably got a lot to do with, especially with the Fortnite situation. But I think this is an excuse for Bethesda just to go, you know what, we're not actually interested in making crossplay, and Sony's a good excuse to say no.
I don't know. Is it they make more money from crossplay?
Yeah, like, it's a lot of work and a lot of not a lot of crossplay has ever been done. People constantly cry out for it, and
with the exception of Switch, I think the servers that this stuff connects to.
Oh, yeah.
Is going to be so agnostic from the system that crossplay probably doesn't mean too much for a lot of these games. Some games definitely think it does, but I think the things like Fallout 76 and Rocket League and stuff, like they're just connecting to servers somewhere that, like, what have the two systems got so differently that makes it hard?
The only thing I would say is
profile pictures and all that, like the.
Not even that, but patching. I mean, you do get specific issues. To keep the versions reconciled is probably trickier than it seems at first.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I think it's interesting to point out that there isn't much crossplay in general that's ever happened.
My answer to that is when you're searching for a match, it should only search for other people using your version. So when the versions are out of sync, it would just not crossplay.
Yeah, that could probably cause another bunch of crying for people about versions being out of sync, though. It'd give another thing people will complain about, because gamers will complain about the smallest little things.
They will
act like it is the end of the fucking world.
Yeah, it's hard. Nobody wins.
I know. It's not simple. I don't think it's as simple as people want it to be.
It can be. People will just suck.
Yeah. And some of that's developers, some of that's publishers,
platform
holders. But I think it is worth noting that the list of games that are genuinely cross-play compatible across major platforms is very small.
Yes.
And that's not for no reason.
I think that's because old technology was a lot different. Like, they were made on, like, different binaries, like, all that. But everything now is using kind of the same hardware.
Yeah, actually, that is fair. I mean, especially after the end of the PS3 era, processor architecture, as far as I'm aware, is pretty similar across all of them. We don't have anything weird like Cell in play.
It's like, if you make a game with Unity, you can deploy to any project with using the same core functions in your game.
Yeah.
So that crossplay is becoming easier and easier for developers to make, and if people like Sony don't let it, like, that people want it because it is becoming easier to make. Let's say for your games, for developers, they want the communities to be big and strong for these multiplayer games, right?
Yeah.
If you've got three people on each console, that means they've only got two other people to play with. But if they've got 12 people all together, that's a bigger pool of people to play with, which is what people want.
I agree with that in principle. I just wonder why we haven't seen it. It's not like some of this technology hasn't just been around. It hasn't been around for a while.
I think... a lot of the it takes bigger companies who have been making games for longer, and I don't mean like they've been making games for 20 years. I mean the big projects that come out now need to do it first, pay for the little bit of research and development that goes into it before it'll get rolled out in engines and stuff. So that's why you don't see much of it now, but every game that comes out you're going to see another game that uses it. Like, it's just going to grow until multiplayer is cross-play everywhere. Like, everyone's going to be like... Like, your kids are going to be like, wait, you couldn't play on just anything?
Yeah.
You couldn't just open up your toaster and play Skyrim? Or your Etch-a-Sketch?
Because in the future, that's the only game that will be left.
Yeah, exactly. So, while I understand that in the past, it was definitely... a lot harder with everything. Like, you had to do so many for, like, the original Xbox and original PlayStation. You would have had to to port that game would have been such a monumental effort, and there'd be no that the network architecture worked
together.
There's
a lot more platform agnostic middleware going on.
Exactly. So I think these days it's very I think people use it as an excuse that like, oh, it's hard, but it's not. Unless like you're making your game on like a really custom engine or something, but if you're making it on Unreal or Unity or any of the other ones out there, it's a lot easier than people probably think. And it just definitely surprises benefits me the developer. That,
say, I guess this comes down to the old complaint about keyboard and mouse versus
controller,
which is its own thing.
That's its own thing. I see a lot of people use controllers on PC. Especially for car games. If you're playing a car game, you're going to suck with the mouse and keyboard.
So it works both ways. This gets really controversial with shooters because people are the way they are about it. But that's the biggest market I see for crossplay. It's not like Call of Duty. Like, they have got massive player bases on all consoles, all platforms.
Exactly. And when these player bases die, they could die a lot less fast.
Yes.
If they had the massive amount of people.
But then again, doesn't that play into something like Activision? They don't want the player base to last. They want it to last till the next game comes out.
I don't know.
You can go down the conspiracy hole with that. But
actually, like, I think they make more money from keeping a game going longer than making a new game. I know it's easy for them to make a new Call of Duty every year. But if people are happy with the game and they can just keep releasing DLC for it at half the energy.
That's true, because I mean that's the whole point about this push towards quote unquote, you know, live services in games.
So
or games becoming a live service is that we just want to replace a core engine and just make you buy DLC for it every
I don't think
day.
It's a symptom of it, I think it's a cause of it. The lack of crossplay makes developers want to refresh their player bases every year.
Yeah, that's a fair way to look at it.
I could be super wrong. Everything I say is an opinion, but I can see it. If they could put less effort into keeping a game alive longer and make the same money, they would do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's that. Did you see the Monstrum trailer? I thought it looked interesting.
I did.
It's a survival, not survival, it's a horror, procedurally generated horror game, which I think is cool, because if you play through it again, you won't be able to just expect what's coming around each turn because it's going to be different.
Yeah. Now, I'm not a tech guy as far as knowing game development, but to me, procedurally generated feels as interesting to say as we use texture mapping.
Yes, I agree.
I kind of rolled my eyes at, okay, cool, you're procedurally generated.
It just means it's not going to be the same every time. And no, that doesn't make a game. I just don't think it's been done in a horror game before, so that makes it interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I haven't seen one, but I just went through Resident Evil 7, and once you start going through the house a few times, like you kind of you know how to go around that corner and stuff.
Yeah.
So I could see if there was a horror game where like that changed, you'd be like, oh, really uneasy the whole time. That being said, the quality of the game is not the best. It looks very indie, which is fine.
It just struck me as looking a little generic.
Yes, it did look very generic, and I think that's because of the procedurally generated.
Yes. It was a big fad for quite a while to bang on about your game being procedurally generated as if this meant it was better.
Well, could you imagine Minecraft if it wasn't procedurally generated?
No, but that game is built in a very specific way around procedural generation.
Exactly. And this game might be as well. But it probably isn't.
No.
But without playing it, I can't tell.
Yeah. I think you've got to do a lot of work to take advantage of procedural generation. And I think in a lot of games that, you know, it suits the crafting type stuff because
people want to make sure
the constructions, the buildings, all that suit a procedurally generated backdrop. Whereas when you're in an environment that's supposed to be, you know, buildings, houses, all that
kind of
stuff.
It's really hard to do with a story.
Yeah, that kind of handcrafted precision is what makes that stuff good. And that's why something like, I mean, I haven't played the new Resident Evil, but I mean, people have gone on quite a lot about how great it is. And I'm inclined to believe them. What I've seen of it looks pretty darn good. A lot of that would have come down to painstaking, you know, construction of an environment.
Oh, and exactly.
You can get close, but you can't quite get there with procedural generation. And I think the best use of procedural generation in those kind of instances is to procedurally generate your environment and then handcraft it from there.
Yes, that's really good. That, I see a lot of developers doing.
To me, procedural generation shouldn't be something you're doing on the fly in your final product. It should be something you're doing to generate your final product.
And we mean in most cases. There are obviously cases where it's fine.
Yeah. But that's where I think it really suits. And this is why what I mean about it being as interesting as saying it's texture map. Like, it's just another tool. It's a tool that I think is poorly understood by gamers and doesn't necessarily need to be understood by gamers. And it's not really a selling point.
No, I completely agree. The reason I put it here is just because I don't think it's been done in a horror game. And I can see it being a good thing in some horror games.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential. Yeah,
for games with like jump scares.
The trailer particularly just didn't stand out to me.
It didn't stand out to me. I was more interested in it because of the match between procedurally generated and horror games. I think this game won't be a big hit. I think it might take a few more games to use that type of technology to get it right, but I think it's something that could be explored really nicely because of the way that horror games play out and giving you replay value. Like the second time you go through a horror game, it's 1/4 as scary, probably.
Yeah. So, my only exception to that will be Alien Isolation because that game is terrifying.
But that kind of had like unique procedurally generated instances of what the alien does. It wasn't scripted.
Yeah, okay. The AI, I mean, you could call that procedural generation, I guess.
I don't call it procedural generation, but I do call it like it wasn't handcrafted.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not 100% scripted. Like there's some scripting, but there's a lot of the AI doing its thing. Yeah. Absolutely.
So,
although I get the feeling that that was more scripted than they let on.
It probably was, but like all this stuff is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, oh, I'm not crapping on a AI doing its thing. And I'm not, you know, I'm not crapping on scripting because I think people have come to this idea that a linear game is a dirty word.
Oh, but a linear experience,
if it's well crafted, is fantastic. It's what's so good about early Call of Duty. I mean, Call of Duty 4. Is a very linear experience.
I loved the stories for the original ones. They were really fun.
But the set pieces are fantastic. It's like playing a movie. That kind of thing, it sounds like such a buzzwordy marketing thing. But a well-scripted scene like that is like that. It's a set piece. It looks fantastic. It's fun to play. Sure, it's the same every time you do it, but does it really matter when it's done that well?
I completely agree.
I'd say the same to... about, you know, Half-Life 2. Whole thing is scripted. That is a masterpiece of scripting.
Exactly. There's lots of games like it. That being said, there still is games now. I don't like the fact that like EA and stuff think that single player is dead because it's super not. Yeah. Like,
it's really not.
Look at like Bethesda. They make majority, like, yes, they're big open world games that are definitely not linear, but they are single player.
But I mean, if you look at Bethesda as a. Combined as a publisher, as well as just Bethesda Game Studios, you know, obviously they own id now, you know, I mean, discounting the multiplayer in Doom, which was average at best, that is one of the finest single player experiences we've had in years.
Yes.
And that is beautifully single player focused and there's so much life in single player games.
I completely agree. Don't Nod games are great single-player experiences. Everyone should go play them. One more thing before we finish up. So Telltale, speaking of single-player games.
Yes.
Very good example, again. And just a lot of what we talk about, like how old engines were hard to use and stuff for crossplay. Telltale is apparently ditching its old engine, so I'll be making something new. So when that first came out, it was like refreshing and new how they could do all the choice stuff, but they've used that for years. It's definitely shown its age, and I think their games aren't not eye-catching anymore. They're not, oh, wow, look what they're doing with, like, look what Telltale's doing. I think a lot of that's to do with their game engine, and, like, they haven't strayed from their formula at all.
Yeah, at all, no. they did a little bit, and then they kind of settled pretty hard into it. Yeah, engine-wise, I mean, at the end of the day, the stuff that they do that's unique to Telltale, you could implement that in any engine if you've got technically capable people.
Exactly. There's
nothing special about their engine that does multiple-choice scenarios. it really needs to go. And I can understand why it's kept around so long, because once your staff get good at a workflow and proficient in a workflow, to move on to a completely new technology can be almost as expensive as training up someone to use what you've already got.
It's basically team cohesion. Once someone's done something in like an engine before, they can do the same thing probably in half the time.
Exactly. And once look at the amount of projects that Telltale were taking on. Like, they were taking on so many licenses at once.
Yeah, because they made the engine. That was the hard work. They made the first game and the hard work. The rest was just, all right, we need to make a story and some art to put in this.
And the hard work was done. Now, when did the first Sam & Max, like, revival game come out?
Oh, so long ago, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, they're pretty good for what they were. Definitely probably the only example of episodic gaming that is actually episodic. In fact, I think Telltale are probably the only guys who've ever really pulled it off. But yeah, that engine is that old. And that's, we're talking 2004, 5, something like that.
Yeah, it's old. Anyway,
it's very more than two.
We've hit an hour, so I think our time's up.
Alrighty.
But before we go, what have you been playing this week?
I have been playing XCOM and Stellaris because I love my strategy games.
Yeah, they are great games. I like that XCOM... What was it? Xenonauts 2?
Yeah, Xenonauts 2 is on its way. I think will be a nice...
You played Vermintide because we played that on High
Strokes. Yes, Vermintide 2, yes. I went and bought that. Oh, and I've played a little bit of Darkest Dungeons because I picked that up on sale.
Oh, nice. I've just gotten Final Fantasy 15, so I'll give that a go on PC. Cool.
I've been playing Vermintide myself. But I haven't got very far into it.
Yeah, fair enough. They're big games. So Dota 2, and I re-downloaded Overwatch, as much as I hate the loot boxes in it, because Caitlin wants to play the hamster ball. So
yeah, that looks interesting, but yeah, I've never got around to playing Overwatch.
Yeah, well, thank you for listening, everybody. We have had a good time talking and bantering about games. So
thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, you can get Michael on. He's Raptor Shadow on basically everything, from what I understood.
Yep, that's pretty much it. I'll also plug my SoundCloud full of crappy music, because that's another thing I do.
Yeah, he does music, so go check out that. And he plays gigs sometimes, so if you are in Australia and he is around, go listen to him bang some drums and tear some strings and yell into things.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you, everybody. We'll catch you next week.
No worries. Bye.